it would be helpful if you enlarged that, if that's possible.
May it please the court, my name is Patrick Nelson. I represent the appellants, James Robertson, wife Patricia, Dwayne Jacobs and his wife Carolyn Sue Jacobs. Each of the four of them are associated partners of Jacobs Cattle Company. This is the third appeal to this court in this case. We've narrowed issues each time, and we are now down to just two issues. One issue involves the calculation, the proper calculation, of the partnership buyout distributions to be paid by the partnership, Jacobs Cattle Company, each of the dissociated partners or appellants. And the other issue involves the propriety of the trial court's order in the final judgment directing that the payment be made to the trial court clerk. In Robertson 2, the second opinion of this court, there were two issues or two statements I want to quote. They're not lengthy, so bear with me here. The first is a finding made by this court. We find that capital gain from the hypothetical sale of land should be distributed to the partners in accordance with paragraph 11 governing the distribution of net profits, finding upon which the conclusion is based. In the conclusion, the court states, we reverse the decision of the district court and remand the cause with direction to enter an order which calculates a buyout distribution by adding 12.5% of the profit received from a hypothetical sale of the partnership's assets on September 20, 2011, to the value of each dissociated partner's capital account. Unquote. And that is the crux of the matter. The mandate issued after this court's decision in Robertson 2 required the trial court, quote, without delay, proceed to enter judgment in conformity with the judgment and opinion of this court. Unquote. There are three elements to the buyout calculation. One, determining the capital gain profit from the partnership's assets on September 20, 2011, and the significant asset is the land. Personal property was less than 1% of the value, and there's no evidence about any profit from it. Number two, what 12.5% of that profit is. And number three, what is the value of each of the dissociated partners' capital account as of September 20, 2011? That's it, three elements.
Mr. Nelson, yes. In the prior case, wasn't the figure for the total net liquidation value, in other words, liquidation value of the assets less liabilities, wasn't that number $5,212,015?
Yes, it was, Your Honor, and that was from exhibit number 150, which was an assumed liquidation of the partnership.
And of all of the assets of the partnership?
Yes, and the total assets and less the net liquidation of the partnership, I'm sorry, total liabilities, that was the total amount of, the net total amount of all of the assets of the partnership. No part of that includes profit.
Isn't it also previously determined and undisputed that the capital accounts totaled $1,159,914?
Yes. Yes.
And those capital accounts would have included all of the profits and losses cumulatively during the life of the partnership, but not including the hypothetical sale.
Yes, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. Yes. But that analysis, Your Honor, has nothing to do with profits at all. And in this court's decision in Robertson 2, the remand with directions was specific, and the specific direction as far as the profit is concerned is adding 12.5% of the profit, not value, but profit, received from a hypothetical sale of the partnership's assets, number 20. We don't focus on liquidation value of the whole partnership. That's a separate issue. The issue that this court addressed and required the trial court to address was the amount of the profit received from the hypothetical sale of the land, which is all we're talking about, the land. And that issue is resolved by, among other evidence, exhibit number 146, which is before us on the screen. It's a very straightforward calculation. You start out with the sales price of the land, which is the value as determined in this court's first opinion in Robertson 1 and the trial court. And that's the $5,135,000 figure. You subtract from that the cost of the land, which comes from the partnership agreement, and that's the $121,300 figure, leaving the capital gain. It's a straightforward, very simple mathematical calculation. $5,013,700. Which, of course, is different than the net value of the partnership for liquidation purposes. This focuses on the profit from the hypothetical sale only. And that's all it is. And the last part of that, the last line of exhibit number 146, is what is the share of that profit which is to be allocated to each of the dissociated partners? And it's just 12.5% of the total profit.
Mr. Nelson, does the record reflect what the profit or loss would have been on the hypothetical sale of the remaining assets?
No, it does not. There's no evidence in the record as to what that figure would be. I would say, however, that the value of the assets, the personal property assets, was something like $35,000 plus, less than 1% of the total value of the assets, which would be made up of several items. One is cash in the bank. There was notes receivable, but then personal property. But it's 1% of the value of the land. So it's really, it's a non-issue, and it was not litigated. We covered the first and the second issues to determination of the distribution shares, and that's the profit on the sale. 12.5% of that, and that's the figure, $626,713, which is in and of itself is greater than each of the distribution figures that the trial judge ordered here. The third element is the value of the capital accounts of each of the dissociated partners. On that issue, there is no dispute between the parties, and that is the only item from exhibit number 150 which is relevant. The rest of it is not relevant after this court's decision in Robertson 2. And that is the capital account values, and there's no dispute in that. So really, there isn't much of a dispute about any of the facts. And none of these, by the way, are controverted in the evidence. Not the sale price of the land, not the cost of the land, not the capital gain of the sale, or the hypothetical sale of the land, not the 12.5% of that figure, and not the capital accounts of each of the dissociated partners. Not one of those facts is in dispute in the evidence. The other issue is the trial court's order that the proceeds of the distribution amounts be paid to the court clerk. The first time that was ever ordered was in the trial court's decision after Robertson 2. It clearly goes beyond the scope of the mandate from this court, and the trial court had no authority at all to order that. I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Dalena, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm Dave Dalena. I'm here on behalf of Jacobs Cattle Company and Dennis Jacobs with Greg Jensen from ORG, who has represented only Jacobs Cattle Company in the proceedings below. I'll speak on behalf of both our parties today.
Ordinarily, what you have when you hear one argument is a legal problem. I think today you have a math problem and nothing else. We have here a family partnership that has $5,200,000 approximate total dollars. The question is, how should that money be divided to disassociated partners? The contention presented by the appellant is that the appellants should get a reward or a bonus or benefit from having been wrongfully disassociated. They should get more than their proportionate share of the revenue that is available to be distributed. And their argument is that because this old partnership agreement contains a distinction between equity ownership interests and income distribution rights for the partners, they get more as they depart. Our contention is that when you decided this case for the second time, you adopted specifically the testimony of the certified public accountant whom the appellants presented on remand. His testimony identified Exhibit 150 as setting forth the correct distribution of the amounts of money that should be received by the disassociating partners, and that's the amount of money that the trial court awarded in this case.
That's the capital account document.
That's correct. And, Your Honor, you can find that testimony on page 163 of the Bill of Exceptions, or you can find it on page 6 of the appendix, or of the transcript. One page. And the testimony by Mr. Nelson of the witness, Mr. Puck, is whether Exhibit 150 sets out what those calculations should be. This is Exhibit 150. And I'll hope that I can just move it up the page for you to show what its logic is. It starts with our $5,200,000 number. It identifies the partners and the amounts identified as distributable under the district court's analysis and your opinion in Roberts 2, and contrasts it with the claims that are presented by the appellants. And if you follow the math all the way down the page to reach the bottom line and use the math presented by the appellants, this partnership is short by approximately $1 million of having enough money to pay everyone out. If the appellants were to get what they contend for today, and you were to ask yourself, what is left for the others using exactly the same calculus, the mother of all of these people who owns Jacob's Cattle Company and the brother who has remained loyal to her would be shorted by $1 million. Our contention is that when you apply the statute in Robertson 2, and that statute is section 67434(2), what you intended was that the profit be determined or the amount available upon a liquidation be determined, that the capital not be counted twice but be counted only once. So in order to determine that amount, you have to be sure the capital accounts have come out so they're not counted twice. You multiply times the income fraction, then you add the capital back in, and that calculus, to use a term that's been too popular today, allows the numbers to reconcile at $5,212,015. No other approach does so. And if this court were to conclude that it should construe its own mandate the way the appellants wish, it would place a premium on constant calculation by partners of the opportune moment at which to dissociate and sting those who would remain. That's not what 67434 intends. It intends that dissociated partners be treated fairly, not that they get a premium. And that's what we're asking that you conclude with your resolution of this case today so that we never come back again. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? A minute and 35 seconds, Mr. Nelson.
Please, Court. I don't know where Mr. Dama got the document that he displayed for the court, but that's not exhibit number 150. This is exhibit number 150. Now, it's marked up, I can see the point, yellow highlighted, red markings. This is the document that's exhibit number 150. I don't want to say misled the court, but that's not what he showed. The only item that's relevant on this document are these figures right here, which are capital accounts of each of the dissociated partners just prior to allocation of the profit. The question...
Oh, excuse me. So what we saw on the previous screen was tendered by the CPA. Is that right?
The prior document Mr. Domino showed
yeah.
you? No, this document.
I beg your pardon. The prior document. That,
oh, yes.
Yeah, that Mr. Domino
Exhibit number 146? Both
I don't know. I don't know what it was, but we were looking at something that Evan was purported to show a short of 960 some thousand. Was that prepared by the CPA for the opposing party?
I think that document was what Mr. Domina showed the court, and I don't know where he got that.
Okay. Evidently in the record.
Well, that I was, no, my knowledge is not in the record. I haven't seen it. The two documents that have some bearing today are this one, which is exhibit number 150 and 146, which I had on the display earlier, the calculation of the capital gain. Mr. Domina indicated that the appellant's expert McPuckett's testimony and documents were accepted or adopted by this court. They were not.
Mr. Nelson, we really can't, or at least I can't, from this distance, see the line of the capital accounts, but not worrying about showing it to us, the figures on that line to which you refer are entirely consistent with the numbers used by the district court for the capital accounts, correct?
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Yes. The law of the case is what this court directed the trial court to do.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments for the day. Court is adjourned and you are excused.